Welcome to the Speech Uncensored podcast. I'm Leanne, your host, and we are back from a very long hiatus, an unexpectedly long hiatus, but it was exactly what it needed to be. It was restorative and relaxing, and now I'm back and ready to tackle lots more wonderful episodes of the Speech Uncensored podcast, which is hopefully one of your many one-stop shops on your journey to learning more about the medical SLP world. And I'm super excited because today I'm joined by Lauren Schwabisch, an SLP working in the medical sphere for the past 22 years. And our topic is on active listening. And Lauren, when I got your submission for this on active listening, I was like, she understood the assignment. Like, this is so great. This is your one thing that you want other SLPs, probably honestly everybody could benefit from, is the topic of active listening. And I love that. So welcome, Lauren. It's so great to have you.
You know, dream come true to be here with you. I'm so excited that you are back and you are creating wonderful, meaningful content for med SLPs like me and you, because I think that's just, you know, it enriches our brains. So I love it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So Lauren, tell me a little bit more about you. I gave like a tiny little couple nuggets of facts about you. Tell me more.
So like you said, I've been a medical speech pathologist for 22 years. I started my career in a large city hospital in New York City, and there was every unit under the sun. It was ICU, it was rehab, it was long-term care, it was everything. And I loved it and I learned so much. And then I moved down to DC and I started working at an inpatient rehab facility in Northern Virginia. And I was there for 16 years and I loved it. It was a dream job in a million ways. And then, like many people, pandemic came and I needed to shake it up. So I ended up leaving in 2021 and I started my own private practice, NeuroSpeech Services, which is going to be 1 year old next week.
Congratulations.
I survived being an entrepreneur so far, which I'm really excited about. And I specialize in treating adults with neurogenic disorders. So most of my patients have had a stroke, acquired brain injury, maybe an early diagnosis of dementia. And I go into their homes and I do the most rewarding and meaningful person-centered therapy. And it has just been invigorating for me in a million different ways. So I'm also doing a little bit of executive function coaching. So working kind of the skills in a different format, which is new too. And then when I'm not working, I am raising two teenagers and I am an avid gardener. So I'm growing lots of flowers and that's my brain health too. I just will, you know, spend some time in the garden. So that's me.
That's awesome. I love that. I took up paddle boarding and roller skating over the last year and a half. So those have been like my brain health, like learn something new, do something new.
I love it. And just like checking out of, you know, sometimes my kids will see me like staring out the window and I'm just looking at, I dug up a patch of grass in my yard and I made a meadow. I called it my pandemic project. And it's just this place where there's birds and butterflies and all sorts of pollinators and crazy flowers. And I just stare at it, quite honestly. And it is a way to just zone out and be in a different place. So paddleboarding sounds like something maybe slightly more physically difficult, but just as rewarding. That's great.
Yeah, I love it because you get to be outside and on the water. I love water. I am like, it is my element. And you do a little work to get out there, but then once you're out there, you just lay down or you jump in and you swim. And it's wonderful.
Love it. Love it.
All right. So active listening. So I feel like the title really does describe what it is. You're listening actively. Okay. So how hard could it be, Lauren? Why are we talking about active listening today?
Right. So simple, right? Just turn those ears on. So active listening is this very much a communication skill, which I think is the skill part of it is really important to think about. And it's listening with a goal to understand. So I think it's very different from listening with a chance to connect or to jump in and to share information. You're really, your whole goal here is to just be able to listen not only for content, but also for feeling.
Yes.
And then to reflect that back. So active listening is really essential to things like establishing rapport when you're meeting someone new, or building trust, or motivating action. All of these things we need our patients to do, we need our colleagues to do. And it really is about conveying engagement and respect to the speaker. And so I think that it's very much this act of, it's like unconditional attention. And I think we are so distracted and we are pulled in so many different directions that the act of really demonstrating pure and focused attention to what someone is conveying to you is really powerful. Mm-hmm. And for me, I did a lot of work on this when I was at the hospital, and I would give the analogy of, you know, your clinical skills are the door, right? Patients are trying to get at, and your active listening skills are the key, right? It unlocks what you have to offer clinically, but they can't get to it unless you've started with active listening, which is why I think it's so important. And so active refers to both physical, so nonverbal things that we do, and also some verbal things. So the nonverbals are really about your physical presence, right? So the body language that we have, you know, where are our hands? What are we holding on to? You know, how much, where are we in proximity to the patient or the other person we're speaking to? So it's maintaining eye contact. It's looking relaxed, but not too relaxed, right, in your appearance. And it's really using your physical presence to demonstrate that I'm hearing you and I'm understanding what you're emoting and telling me. Mm-hmm. It's doing what you just did, right? This vocal affirmation. So, right? All of those little vocal things that really can share what your thoughts are as you're listening to what someone is sharing with you, which I think is really, it's so subtle, but it again is so important. And then this is the hardest part, I think, for many people, is deferring judgment and not interrupting, which I know we're all so excited. We all have so much to say. We just want to jump in and, you know, and give our own experience. And I think that that is really something that we have to work on inhibiting as active listeners. And that I know is probably the hardest thing for me, right? I'm just so excited to connect and relay information. And so the act of just, you know, asking the right question and then shutting up is really part of this. That it is something we all have to work on. So that's the nonverbal side. And then the verbal side, there's very specific components and we'll kind of get into it today, but those include things like seeking clarification. So phrases like, let me see if I understand, or do you mean this? And asking open-ended questions, which we all love to do. The biggest one I love is paraphrasing. So what I hear you saying is this. Mm-hmm. Reflecting back feelings. So to me, it sounds like you're saying you're feeling this, or I get the sense that this is really frustrating for you. And then summarizing, which I think is so important for people, especially with communication disorders, right? So if your memory's, you know, lacking or your auditory comprehension is taxed, I can take our conversation, what they've shared with me, and I can kind of wrap it up in a way where I can hit the highlights. So that to me is active listening. It's this combination of your physical presence and the language that you use that really invites someone to give you as much as they are able to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I find that I've grown towards that. I feel like at a low level of, like intuitively, because I'll read lots of articles, like, I'm talking about like opinion pieces, not like research articles or anything, about interacting with others, engaging with others. I haven't studied active listening like specifically within that context, but everything that you described are things that I intentionally like pay attention to doing in therapy sessions. Like when I made the shift towards person-centered care, these are things right at the forefront, right?
Absolutely.
And so I started literally telling myself in my head, stop talking, Leanne. Don't interrupt them, Leanne. They're not done talking, Leanne. Yes, you are so excited to share this piece of information that directly ties in with what they just shared with you. And it's going to be so wonderful for them. But you need to wait for them to finish.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it is something that person-centered care, service recovery, which if you're in a hospital or skilled nursing facility, you know, you get all these patient satisfaction, you know, lectures at how important that is as a driver. And so knowing how to recover bad service, which happens all the time, right? The lab tech came in and, you know, had to stab you 7 times before they could get your blood, or a doctor came and gave a really too fast explanation, or the night nurse woke you up and you couldn't get back to sleep. Our patients sometimes get so upset, understandably, about something. And you're the one that has to, you know, confront that. And so service recovery is all about active listening skills. So it's being able to, you know, listen and empathize and apologize and acknowledge and all of that. And that is the thing, right? And so I think that when you look at the type of care we value, that we like the most, our listening skills and our active listening skills, that is what we bring. It's not about, you know, my aphasia knowledge or how do I, you know, test for certain things. It's truly about the listening skills.
I absolutely agree. I think that is one of the most crucial skills we need as clinicians. Like it's right up there. It's at the top of the list, because nothing else you do will really matter if that patient, that person doesn't feel validated, they don't feel heard. And we do active listening to begin the stages of building that rapport with them and to build that therapeutic alliance. And once we have that and they trust us and they feel like we are on their team, like we want to be, because we've effectively communicated that by actually not saying anything at all, you know, by active listening, then everything that comes after that is so much better received. The communication is better. So if we're proposing a therapy technique or a suggestion for a strategy that maybe they think wouldn't work or they're not in tune with, rather than not say anything to us, they could open up that dialogue because they know we're not going to be offended, that we're going to hear them, we're going to understand where they're coming from, and we're going to offer up something different that would fit them better.
Mm-hmm. And when you can tie it back to something, like I always like to say, you know, I was so struck by when you told me that you love to mow the lawn. I mean, that's just what a wonderful hobby that is for you, you know, or when you say, you know, how frustrated you were when that didn't go right for you. I heard that you said that. And so here's something I think might help. And it just allows them to know she's finding the right solution for my situation. Right.
Mm-hmm. So Lauren, where did you start learning about active listening, and what drove you to like naming it, identifying it, and then sharing this information with others?
So when I was at the rehab hospital, I was so lucky to be in a department with a director who really valued staff development. Mm. Just listening to people talking about how it is out in the world, I feel so blessed. She was really wonderful. And so for the last several years that I worked there, I was part of the mentor team. And so I was a rehab clinical specialist. I saw a couple of patients maybe, but I was mostly there to just make sure clinicians were the best clinicians they could be, right? Mm-hmm. What a wonderful position I was in.
Yeah. Dream job for reals.
It really was. And so in that way, I was doing a lot of observations for co-treatments, and I was in team rounds, and I was at family meetings. And I was sort of watching for who are our, you know, high impact, most effective clinicians, and why is it that they are that way? And why are people's names coming up in these, you know, postcards that patients are sending in to compliment our service? What is making these people the way that they are? And when I looked at it, it wasn't always about clinical skill, which we were also trying to grow, right? It was a neuro rehab program. There was a lot of in-services and education that was going there. But you would have younger clinicians who would be just as well received by their patients. And so it wasn't just about experience. And so when I looked to see what these were, I wanted to get more into, we were calling it soft skills, but it's really not soft, right? That's such a silly term. It was really about the communication skills and the personal management skills that were making these folks as effective as they were. So that led to in-servicing, and that led to one-to-one coaching that I was doing with staff. And so that's really where I was able to do it. It was because I was in a position to identify and then extract and distribute those skills to my team. And it, you know, it was really something that people would grab onto. So I might go to a family meeting with someone and watch and see how they connected with a patient or a family. And we would leave the meeting and immediately they'd be like, so how did I do? How did that go? You know, because people want to know how they're doing. And so to for able, you know, for me to be able to say, well, you know, you shared amazing information, but there was too much, right? Or you used, you know, aphasia and apraxia, and you never stopped to think about if the family knew what that meant, right? So really being able to highlight what their strengths were, but also be able to give them opportunities to work. It was, they just were eager to grab onto it. So, and then that's where I, so that's really, I really was doing sort of self-study. And fortunately, if you Google active listening, it comes up not only in healthcare, especially in the nursing literature, but there's tons of stuff out there in the corporate environment too. So there's lots of good resources, which is great.
This is a human being skill, I think.
Absolutely. Like,
it is super helpful in the work that we do, for sure. But I think if you just want to be a good person, this is how you do it.
I will. That's one of the things I told in my in-service was, I actually think it's difficult life experiences that has made me a really effective active listener. So, you know, my grandmother was sick and I had to take care of her and execute her will. And I was talking to all these people I never had dealt with before. And, you know, I have children and parenting and, you know, there's just these experiences, you know, talking friends through terrible breakups. It's like there's communication opportunities abound to be the best listener you can be. And so it's not just a work thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Now, have you gotten any negative feedback when you educate or teach or promote active listening? Has someone tried it and they've been like, listen, Lauren, this blew up in my face. They thought that I didn't have anything to share because I was so quiet. I did what you told me. I was listening. I like didn't interrupt them. And then they just talked the whole session and I never got to do any therapy.
I wouldn't say that that's what the feedback is. I think what people perceive is that they don't have the time to do this.
Ooh, yes. Okay. Tell me more.
People think that this is taking time away from something they should be doing. So, you know, our healthcare climate does not incentivize us to be good listeners. And we see that from our clinician side, but we also see it as healthcare recipients, right? Your doctor is not spending the time that you probably would like with them, right? So I think we're stressed about productivity and we arrive to sessions and we think that we have to do this like long to-do list that we show up with. And so we feel in our minds that we have no time to listen. So I think that that's probably the bigger issue is that therapists will tell us we just don't have the time. I also think that to receive someone's emotions is really hard. And some clinicians just don't like the silence, the awkward silence. And so it's not so much that they're just sitting and waiting, but they're actually just filling the space. And they may be filling the space with, you know, diverting comments like, oh, you're fine. You'll be okay. Or don't worry about that because it's uncomfortable to hear someone's really upsetting or stressful feelings, right? So I think that that's part of it. And then I think what happens a lot, and I see this kind of in my friend group, is that people will be like, so, and they'll ask a question, but immediately follow it up with, did you do it this way or did you do it this way? Like these forced choices. And what I think that does is it's people perceive themselves as being an active listener, but they're just kind of, again, filling the space with what they think this person will say. And so that's where we really have to work on that sort of inhibition. Just let them talk. And know that the art of this is that you weave in your own thoughts or your observations as you paraphrase or as you summarize or as you reflect back. So it's very much a collaboration. The speaker is sharing, but then you're receiving and reflecting back. So I think, you know, if someone's just like, they talk the whole time, well, you know, that's on you to govern, right, how the time works. But if you can get some of these phrases unlocked, I think that helps out with being able to share the time and the space, but your main role is sitting and allowing yourself to listen. Mm-hmm. I just think it's, to me, I've always heard the time pressure. And so I'll give you an example of what we did at the hospital was we had this expectation that we really wanted a life participation element in goals, right? So it wasn't just that we were saying, you know, your structure function, you know, impairment, and then your activity, but we had this formula that we were training staff to use that included life participation. So, you know, Ms. Porter will follow, you know, 5-step instructions while making a cake to celebrate her sister's upcoming birthday, right? There was this idea that people don't do things in isolation. They need to know you're connecting it back. So we created as a department, this sheet was called Getting to Know You. And it was great. It was a questionnaire. It was 2 pages and it had all these sort of life participation areas. And it was a Likert scale. So people could tell us, is this like 0 important to you? Or is this the most important thing? And then we could pull out from there the top 3 areas that they valued. And so you could really establish the priorities. And it was in this binder we had that was like the first thing that you really touched when you met with the patient. So we were giving people permission and in fact, really tasking them with sitting and gathering this information. And they would still come back to us and say, I did not have time. And I would say, this is going to write your goals for you. Like, this is so incredibly important. And your patient is going to really feel like you get it. And you can take, you know, your clinical observations and your testing and your impairment information. And you can meet them in the middle and say, here are the steps you can take towards this really important life participation goal you have. You know, if you're a deacon in your church and you're dysarthric, well, let's talk about that. How are we going to take maybe not a, you know, a verse from the Bible, but maybe let's take some key words and let's work on breath support and, you know, articulation. And so you can really connect what you're doing with them at the level that they're presenting at to what they're valuing most. And you know, it was sometimes when it clicked with someone, it was like, they loved it because it did the work for them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when it didn't, it was because they didn't have time. So,
yeah. And I feel like when we're shifting our practice patterns, that it takes a good dose of being able to feel uncomfortable with change because it's hard. And being uncomfortable with doing things wrong a couple times. And that's really hard, I feel like, for a lot of us. And it comes with a sense of exploration. Like you are exploring something new. And I feel like when you frame it that way, then you're not making mistakes or failing. You're finding what works and what doesn't work and reshaping your skills for the next try.
I love that. And actually, we were talking about... you know, it's just sort of the clinical aspects of this, but I think the word exploring is finding its way into my documentation when I'm doing active listening, because we are exploring, right? I like to view myself, especially in this private practice role I'm in, I really like to be a partner. And so if I'm with you know, a client, I'll say, we're going to explore this together, right? And so that to me is such a great word. And I'm folding it into my documentation because that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So I feel like we've touched on this a little bit more, but is there anything else you wanted to expound upon on why active listening is so important to our work?
I mean, this is the essence of our craft, right? We are communication specialists. And one of the things I will say is I think, SLPs, especially in a neuro population, or even a medical one where someone maybe has a significant respiratory compromise, you know, trach and vent type setting, but SLPs are oftentimes the best advocates for what our patients are trying to communicate to the people around them, right? And so when we, and I know that I've had PTs and OTs and nurses who will say, how did you get that out of them, right? How do you know that they want that? And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that we are truly, you know, we are a helping profession and we are gifted in this. And so we become almost like the interpreters for our patients who are unable to communicate otherwise. So for me, this is really, it lines up well with what SLPs are really so talented at. And you just elevate that skill when you acquire some of the active listening components. And for me, like I was saying, you know, I've gone to conferences and webinars and journal clubs, and I have a good amount of deep knowledge in the neuro rehab population, and yet it's the active listening skill work that I've just kind of done on my own that I feel has really returned the most benefit to me.
I would have to agree. Yeah. I feel like that is such a big part of what I do now, because I've spent the beginning of my career working so hard on those clinical skills, you know, how to treat, how to assess, that when I didn't feel like I was making progress with my patients and I didn't feel like they were feeling successful despite evidence-based practice and doing all the things I was taught and the things that I read and researched, I knew that there was more out there that I was not accessing and providing for my patients. So when the tools of active listening and motivational interviewing came alongside the whole view of person-centered care, it unlocked everything. Like, now I'm the critical one and I'm like, I think you could go farther. And my patients are like, I am so happy with the progress that I've made. I'm like, that's great. Thank you. So it's been a wild change. Like their view of their progress, where they've come from, where they're headed, they feel more equipped. They feel confident about continuing to practice the skills and learning new skills at the conclusion of our outpatient therapy time. Like, yeah, it's been a key part. And I feel like finally doing the therapy I've been needing to do this whole time.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I feel so similarly. And, you know, a lot of it is when you're looking at these patient-reported outcome measures, and it's not just about, you know, standardized testing as the judge of whether you improve, but asking someone, you know, how did that go for you? You know, I have a gentleman right now who is, he's had two strokes. He's kind of in that real chronic phase, and he has a disfluency, a neurogenic stutter. And for him, we can get to fluency, but for him, it's more about feeling comfortable about talking in the community. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we've sort of like the strategy, the pacing strategy has actually been the most effective for him. And yet I'm like, but how about going out to the farmer's market this weekend, you know? And he's there with me because we're using his confidence in communication, not his fluency, but his confidence and his ability to be there. And so you're right, like the sky's the limit. And we connected in that way. You know, he has shared with me personal interests that, you know, aren't directly related to our fluency training, but yet they are the underpinnings for what my therapy is with this gentleman.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've definitely been touching on this, but how does active listening impact the patient and their progress in therapy? Uh-oh, did we already answer this question?
Me? Probably did. But actually, I will say that one of the things I think is the most important is two things. One is, I think, establishing the plan of care, which we really covered already. But I also think, especially what I'm really learning in my private practice, is I see a lot of individuals who have mild TBI, maybe post-concussive syndrome, and they look fine, right? Their ADLs are great. Maybe they're actually working. And so they really have this invisible disability. And so for them, the active listening skills are actually the things I probably exercise the most, because mm-hmm. they spend all their time trying to convince other people that something is wrong. And so when you can hear what they're trying to say to you, not just the content, but more sort of the emotional impact, and reflect it back to them, they really feel seen and understood in a setting, you know, with physicians and other clinicians, even family members who really just don't get it. So I think in that case, it secures their motivation, their engagement to try things that are new, because you've really, you know, kind of gotten to where they are. But also, one of the things I would do in the hospital that I really liked was I would ask patients, how is this going for you? And really allow them, either at the end of the course of therapy or actually at the end of a session, to invite them to give me their feedback with an open-ended question. We can look at identifying barriers to progress. So we might think that we've come up with this great person-centered goal and then we're working on it. And then you say, how did that go for you? How did that feel? And they land you in a whole new place where you're like, oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought about that. And so I think it really helps with not only evaluating sort of like, do I really have the goal right? Like, I might have said it with you, we might have been collaborating and shared decision-making and all that. But then ultimately, when we take it for a test drive, maybe it's not so good. And they get ownership in clarifying the goals and what needs to happen. And so then I think their satisfaction with where they're going in therapy is even higher. So mm-hmm. by taking the time to really talk about it, I think that that's important. And another thing I'll say is that I think paraphrasing allows patients to really truly understand what's happening with them in a way where you're listening and you're hearing what they have to say and you're reflecting it back for them, but you can kind of weave in some of your clinical terminology. So right now I have a woman who is, she's a new diagnosis of mild neurocognitive disorder. So it's kind of an umbrella term is what I'm sort of understanding. But I'm in functional observation of activities and in listening to her, she really breaks down on the most basic elements. And so what we're sort of figuring out is this anxiety that she mm-hmm. feels coursing mm-hmm. through her system. And so when I paraphrase what she's telling me, you know, she's using words like processing and working memory because she's a retired psychologist. And so she's got all the lingo. And what I can say to her as I'm watching her is I'll say, you know, what I hear you saying is that your attention is being pulled away when these worries about your cognitive status kind of float into your mind. And so you're becoming distracted as you're trying to concentrate on writing your medical appointments into your calendar. And that's sort of, that sounds like it's really distressing you. Am I getting that right? And she's like, yes. And what I've done is I've really been able to reflect back to her, but I'm also sort of using some of my keywords, which is to say, we're not going to be working on processing and memory so much because we've got to get at the foundation, which is your attention, right? And so in that way too, I think when you are in a therapy session with someone and you can reflect it back for them, they start to become more aware. And for me, that's like, you know, step one of anything, right? I have to become aware of it. So it's everything from establishing the plan of care to helping them to gain some insight and awareness to evaluate how you progress from here. It's everything. It's so important.
So how do you document active listening? If this is a crucial skill that we bring to therapy, how do we document it? How do we demonstrate its utility in the services, the skilled services that we provide?
I mean, I think as like you're saying, person-centered care, I feel like is becoming more recognized by payers like Medicare. So, you know, where patient-reported outcome measures, you know, probably were non-existent, you know, certainly when I started in the field and now are really, you know, I don't want to say required, but certainly encouraged, you know, to be utilized to capture the patient experience. I think active listening in this way is something that we can actively document in to really capture what we're doing, especially in the areas of goal setting, certainly patient and family education. And then in my case, metacognitive strategy training. So I'm a big fan of using active listening, but then I may also use, like we were talking about explored, but I will also use things like collaborated or promoted or guided or facilitated or reflected. These action words that are out there in our documentation world that we can use and then follow up to describe how we provided that skilled care. Mm-hmm. And I do think that those are skilled terminologies, but they all sort of have active listening as the sort of the basis. Mm. And then I also think, you know, the content of what you gather as an active listener can also find your, you know, document, it can find its way into the documentation, especially for goals, but also of the feelings and the emotions that you might be able to put in there and say that you sort of were able to emotionally validate that person. Or that may be the basis for which you provide a referral to another allied health provider, so maybe psychology, which I think is important, especially when we're looking at chart reviews. You know, how do I know that I see interdisciplinary plan of care? Well, when I've been active listening and a patient tells me something, I validate it and then I will, you know, convey that information to other people who may be able to serve that patient in that unique way. And then I think when we think about how we communicate, you know, we're not just writing in our notes, but we're sending emails to our colleagues. We're having, you know, conversations at the bedside or in the hallway. And when we gather this information, this content, and also these feelings, and then we share that with our peers, like we'd said, the SLP becomes sort of the megaphone for allowing this patient's information to be shared with all the healthcare providers that they need.
So how do we know if we're doing active listening right?
So like you said, it's just listening. It's amazing hard. I think becoming aware of what active listening skills are is the best place to start. And I always would tell the clinicians at the hospital, I'm like, if you see someone who is either getting recognized or you think is a great clinician, watch them, right? If you have someone in your, if your aunt is the best listener or you feel that she listens to you, try to pay attention to what she's doing and see if you can try to emulate that or pick out one thing that you think is effective. So I always think it's always good to look around and model what you see or, you know, get that in your toolkit. I think we know we're doing it right when we receive the appreciation of the speaker. So if I summarize for my patients or I paraphrase kind of what I hear them saying, they'll say, yes, oh, you got it, right? And if they don't do that, I'll try again. And I'll say, well, it sounds like you're saying this. And they're like, no. And I'll say, okay, good. Well, help me understand. That's a good one. Help me understand. Because what it tells them is you are in control of what you are sharing with me. And I need you to give me as much information as possible so that I know that I've received what your intention is, right? What you're trying to tell me. So I think that that's part of it is the speaker will convey to you. I think, honestly, it's kind of like gratitude and appreciation, but certainly a sense of satisfaction. Like this was a good communication opportunity. If they're very quiet and they're not yielding that, then you probably have some room to grow. I also think we know we're doing it right when we take stock of our physical presence. So like you were saying, you know, telling yourself to kind of slow down and stop talking in a session, I think that for many of us, we're working so hard just to do the thing that we do, right? I'm just trying to get this clinical stuff like solid that I do think it's a next layer to be monitoring ourselves as we are doing that job. And so if you can find yourself saying, hey, you know what? I always sit with my hands shoved in my scrub pockets. That may not be the best body position for me. Or you know what? I'm documenting and my laptop is right open in front of me. Even if I think I can make eye contact, how does that land with my patient? So I think it's that second layer of now that I've got my tools and actually, why should we wait until we feel like we have the clinical stuff ready? Why don't we say, I'm just going to kind of pay attention to what I'm doing here and catch something that I might be doing. See if I can do it a little bit differently. And then I love just having some key phrases. So sometimes it's just about taking one thing and taking it for a test drive, right? So for example, we were just talking about help me understand. I love tell me more.
Oh, I was going to say that. That's good. My favorite too. Isn't it good? Always say, tell me more. If you're looking for clarification, we have a tendency to say, did you mean this or did you mean that? Like, don't, like you gave that example earlier of a dichotomy. Don't give options. Just say, tell me more. Like, I'm not sure I'm getting everything. Tell me more about that.
I love that one. Love it. Love it. And I'll do that with my kids, right? Because if my son comes home from camp and I'm like, how was camp? What's he going to say?
It was good. It was fine.
Right? Okay. But if I say, tell me about camp. Huh? He went to welding camp last week, right? How was welding? Tell me more about it. How does it work? You know, if I can drop a couple of those open-ended questions and tell me more, especially if I'm not clear. So if someone says something, I'll say, I heard you just say this. Tell me what that means to you. Or if someone says, I want to go back to work. Great. What kind of work do you do? Oh, I'm an accountant. What does that look like for you? Tell me about that experience as being an accountant. Because it also says, I don't know. And I will throw myself under the bus 1,000 times. I might know all about being an accountant. I don't. But if I did, I don't know what it means for them, right?
That's right.
I don't know what it means to be anyone else but me. And so a lot of this too, and I think this is what an environment and a world we live in where we really need to check our biases. We need to understand that my perspective is just that. It's just mine. And so we learn to ask these questions like, what is the experience like for you? And then we stop and we wait. And we might hear back from someone something that we totally didn't think of. And we're listening without judgment. And I think that also is something that, depending on what your feelings are and what your community is like and what your exposure to life is, you know, we might be very judgy of certain lifestyles or certain people or certain perspectives. And so active listening for me is also just another wonderful reason to hear someone's perspective and say, I'm not going to judge it in this moment. You know, it's my politics are not leading, my religion is not leading. I am a clinician who's here to understand you. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
I love that. And I really appreciate that you touch on the importance of recognizing like your nonverbal communication, your body language, and what that's communicating. And I also look at that through the lens of like what energy you're putting out into that therapy room based on how you're holding yourself or what you're doing with your hands or not doing with your hands. You know, if you're listening to someone share, but you're keeping an eye on the clock and it's getting close to done time and your eyes keep darting there, or you have a pen in your hand and you start like tapping it, like these send very loud signals. And if it's not something that you're aware of or in tune to, I highly recommend looking up body language and nonverbal communication. And there's also like fascinating information out there on cultural variations and different norms as well. If you work with multicultural populations, even things like how close or how far away you stand or sit from somebody like sends a message.
Mm-hmm.
I remember walking into hospital rooms, especially on the inpatient rehab unit, and maybe they would be in bed still. And if I thought I was going to have like a shorter session or something, or I had been sitting for a while, I wanted to stand a little bit. They did not like this. And people would say, won't you please sit down? Because, you know, I'm just thinking, oh, I've been sitting for a long time, or I don't want to get too comfortable. Like this is just, I'm just checking in, you know, I don't want to pull up a chair and stay for 2 hours. But that, even though that might be my intent, like the message that I'm sending them could be very different from my intent. Like most people don't like having somebody standing over them, or they do interpret you standing and not sitting as you wanting to leave very soon. And that can be insulting. So
also the power dynamic, right? If I show up and I'm wearing a uniform and I'm in a healthcare setting with someone who views any healthcare worker as an authority figure, and I'm, you know, I'm not tall, but if I'm standing over you, there definitely sets up this dynamic that a lot of people don't feel comfortable to share. And so I think that that's another thing to keep in mind. And it, again, it's none of it is malintentioned, right? None of it is meant to be hurtful or communicate disrespect, but that's why we have to be so self-aware. And that's another one of those skills that, you know, when I was doing staff training, we were talking about these, you know, personal management skills, right? The ability to stop and check yourself and really figure out, what am I doing here that might be turning this person in a certain direction? Why aren't they sharing enough with me? Or why are we not feeling connected, right? And being able to kind of adjust things as necessary. And also, I would say ask for feedback. I mean, maybe not from the patients per se, but if you're sort of saying like, hey, best friend at work, can you tell me why, you know, people are perceiving me in this certain way? I get the sense that they are, and I'd just like to know a little bit more. I think that having a trusted, you know, person to say, you know what, I did notice that you're holding like 500 things. And so your hands are crossed as you're trying not to drop everything. And that, I think, sends a message. And you'd be like, oh my God, maybe I'll leave it all in my office and then I'll come out and chat with that person. But, you know, it's these little things that, as long as we have a growth mindset and we're looking at trying to always do better, I think active listening, there's so much opportunity. And this is absolutely a portable skill. So that's another thing that's really important to recognize, especially as speech pathologists. You know, we might be in outpatient and then we switch to inpatient, or we're going to home health, or, you know, like me, I was in the hospitals, now I'm in private practice, is that we have so much flexibility, and yet the clinical skills can be different. Like I had to start kind of from, you know, I wouldn't say scratch, but I really had to find a whole new set of skills. And yet the active listening skills were things that I used well in inpatient, and I'm really getting a good use out of in private practice. And so I do think that these are the, you know, the clinical skills may be slightly different, but the active listening skills, man, those are consistent. And those, I think, are also what helps us to connect with our bosses and our colleagues. And, you know, those, the more the self-management skills, but active listening is a part of that. I think that those are the things that get you opportunity at work, that might get you promoted, that might get you hired. So the more we take our communication skills seriously, I think the better off we are just professionally in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if any of our listeners aren't sold on the concept of active listening yet, let me also just say, like you were talking about the transportability of this skill to all of the settings that we can work in. Like, you can use it with your spouse. You can use it with your children. You can use it with challenging family members or friends. Like, it's for everything all the time.
It really is. And I think that actually I find that when I think of things that are going a little too fast, like sometimes I might be in a doctor's office and maybe, you know, it's a setting I'm familiar with, but there's just a lot of expectations or a lot of information I might want to share. When I can say, I want to make sure that I understand, right? It's that teach back moment, but I sort of flip the script here. So when my doctor doesn't do it, I come in and I say, I just want to make sure that I understand what you're explaining to me. And I will paraphrase or I will summarize and hit the high points. And I'll say, did I get that right? And what it does is it allows them to fill in any gaps, but it also allows me to kind of slow down what might be an overwhelming situation and then kind of reflect things back to the doctor. And I hope they pick up on it. I mean, one of the things I'd love to be able to do is try to train healthcare professionals, especially physicians in the community, because I just think that that's unfortunately, I think those are the folks who are least likely to go for this type of thing. But I do think that it is, you can become such an effective human being and effective professional when you do have these skills. So I hear you. I think that you can get practice pretty much anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for providing these really great resources that I'll share in the show notes, where people can go and learn more about the application within the speech world. Also, you've shared that there's an actual international journal of listening.
Wow.
So who knew? That's exciting. So many awesome resources that you've shared. Those will be up in the show notes. And also ways for people to connect with you and learn more about you or reach out. So if you want to share those now with our listeners, go right ahead.
Sure. And I will say in terms of those resources, the one that I really like the most is actually from Boston University. It's like the Office of the Ombudsman. I don't even know what that is, but they really break down active listening. They talk about sort of the definitions of those verbal behaviors like clarification and summarizing, and then they give examples and then they talk about feeling words. So I think that's one of the things that we need to be, that's another opportunity to grow is, you know, if you ask me how I'm feeling and I say good, well, that's not really informative, right? Good is not a feeling per se. So there's a whole list of feeling words. And again, when you're trying to reflect back someone's feelings, you better have the words to provide to really reflect that. So that Boston University resource is awesome.
Gold. All right.
And then people can find me at my website, which is neurospeechservices.com. And then on Instagram, I'm having a lot of fun in just describing what my sessions are looking like. I'm inspired by my clients all the time. And so you can find me on Instagram at Neurospeech Services.
Awesome. Well, Lauren, this was a treat. I thoroughly enjoyed this. I loved it. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're so welcome. Like I said, huge fan. So happy you're back. And you just enjoy this the way it is meant to be enjoyed. But I know I am one of hundreds, perhaps thousands of MedSLPs who's so grateful for what you do for our community.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.